This video is sponsored by Skillshare. The first 500 people to use the link in the description get a 2-month free trial. About 3,700 kilometers southwest of Hawaii and 3,700 kilometers northeast of Australia lie the Marshall Islands. Getting here is not particularly easy. The only flights from the United States are through Honolulu, only with United and only a few days of the week, which helps explain why only about 6,000 people visit each year, 16 a day on average. But once you arrive, getting around is quite easy. While the country is spread out across 1,000 islands and 29 atolls, altogether the size of Washington, D.C., about 40% of its 75,000 people live on its capital, Majuro. There are, generously, 4 hotels, a couple ATMs, and 1 main road. No traffic lights, no street names. A taxi downtown costs about 50 cents, or across the island, at most 2 US dollars. Some may see its isolation from the rest of the world as inconvenient, but for the people of the Marshall Islands, that's its charm. Life here is relaxed, carefree, and rather slow. Cars rarely move much faster than 25 miles an hour. Appointments are loosely scheduled, and Hawaiian shirts the national dress code. In the last few years, however, the world has been intruding. As sea levels rise, its beaches are slowly being swallowed by the ocean. And unfortunately, the Marshall Islands are almost entirely beaches. Most land is barely 6 feet above sea level, and in many areas, only 400 or 500 feet wide. So narrow, you can almost always see water from two opposite sides. Some years, like 2013, floods damage hundreds of homes, schools, and stop planes from being able to land. The same thing is happening around the world, but here on small, faraway islands, the clock is ticking, and the question of what to do yet unanswered. For the first time in history, countries may totally disappear. Not politically, but literally and physically. Where once lay a thriving, tropical, paradise community may one day be only a floating sign explaining what once was. Unless something can be done to save them. Like many islands and strategically useful places, the Republic of the Marshall Islands has a long history of foreign imperialism. First by the Spanish, then the Germans, some brief contact with the British, invaded by the Japanese in World War I, and finally, during the next World War, captured from Japan by the United States. It and its neighbors now known as Palau, the Northern Mariana Islands, and the Federated States of Micronesia were put under the administration of the US Navy as the trust territory of the Pacific Islands. Later, in the 80s and 90s, the islands slowly gained their independence. The US government officially recognized its constitution, allowed it to hold elections, and signed a compact of free association. Today, the Marshall Islands are less than a United States overseas territory, like Guam or Puerto Rico, but much more than simply a friendly foreign ally. Legally, an associated state. The islands have access to its federal agencies, including the National Weather Service, Federal Aviation Administration, and Postal Service. The US also agrees to protect and defend the country, although it cannot declare war on its behalf. This part of the United States, but not really, relationship can create some awkward situations. In 2015, the Iranian Navy seized and detained a Maersk container ship traveling 12,000 kilometers away, in the Strait of Hormuz. Maersk is a Danish company, and the ship owned by a Singapore-based operator. However, for tax avoidance and legal reasons, it was registered, like many ships, in the Marshall Islands, which, because of its defense responsibilities, technically obligated the US Navy to respond with a destroyer, although it later clarified it won't do so in the future. Besides a small coconut, breadfruit, and fishing industry, the Marshall Islands just doesn't have that many ways to make money. Without many natural resources, it's had to resort to creative ways of bringing in revenue, like becoming the second most popular ship registry in the world, after Panama. And although sometimes lucrative, these niche markets can make the entire economy of a small nation vulnerable to the whims of foreign actors. Its neighbor, Kiribati, for example, is geographically blessed as the closest non-American soil to the Hawaiian Islands. So, despite having almost no infrastructure or tourist attractions, its Tauboron Island became a regular stop for Hawaiian cruises, who, as foreign registered ships, are legally required to stop at least once outside the country. Recently, though, Norwegian cruises introduced American-flagged ships, rendering the detour unnecessary, and Tauboron back where it started, with virtually no source of income. In a similar vein, Palau is lucky to be home to a unique species of golden jellyfish, which draw tourists from around the world. Unfortunately, they too are slowly dying, which researchers suspect is due, in part, to rising sea temperatures. So, inevitably, with no other options, these states turn to diplomacy. Of the 17 other UN members who recognize Taiwan as a country, for example, 9 are small island nations. It shares embassies with the Marshall Islands, and Taiwan's president at the time was the first head of state to officially visit the country. The islands also receive $78 million in US foreign assistance each year, of the $1.5 billion they've been promised from 2004 to 2024. Of course, there's no such thing as a free lunch. And perhaps nowhere is that more apparent than here, at the giant concrete American-built radioactive dome on Aniwetok Atoll. When the US assumed control of the islands in the 40s, it used them as a nuclear test site for some of the largest and most destructive bombs in history, including the famous Castle Bravo. At 6:45 on March 1st, 1954, its mushroom cloud could be seen 250 miles or 400 kilometers away, eventually reaching 47,000 feet or 14 kilometers, expanding at 220 miles an hour, and leaving a 250-foot deep hole in the ocean. The explosion was 2.5 times stronger than expected, 15 megatons of TNT instead of the predicted 6. It instantly destroyed many of their measuring instruments, contaminated a nearby Japanese fishing crew, and although inhabitants had been evacuated beforehand, because of the unexpected size of the explosion, covered surrounding islands in a white, snow-like, radioactive powder. Children played with it, not knowing of its cancerous effects. Decades later, in 1977, 4,000 US soldiers were sent to clean up the fallout. Over 3 years, they collected 73,000 cubic meters of soil and 400 chunks of plutonium-239, an isotope with a radioactive half-life of 24,000 years. It was then thrown into the crater created by the explosion and covered in a 328-foot, or 100-meter, 18-inch-thick UFO-shaped dome. This was said to be only a temporary solution, as it was not covered with a lining, meaning there's a good chance, according to the US Energy Department, that the toxic radioactive material has already begun leaking out into the ocean, where Marshall Islanders fish and play. Today, in exchange for its payments, the US continues to operate the Ronald Reagan Ballistic Missile Defense Test Site. The US Army is one of the biggest employers on the islands, which have a higher per capita enlistment rate than any state. And because of its proximity to the equator, SpaceX has launched several of its rockets here in the past. So while the Marshall Islands have little leverage with the US, there is some hope it will be forced to deal with rising sea levels as it begins to affect military operations. Aerial images show 6 islets disappeared between 2007 and 14 alone, although not all islands are equally at risk. Some, like the Maldives, are almost completely flat, offering no place to retreat. Others, like Palau, have upland areas residents can move to. Each is differently susceptible to erosion, and some have more or less powerful waves. A few islands, like Tuvalu, may actually grow as storms carry sediment, which varies with seasonal trade winds. But almost everywhere on Earth will be somehow affected. Venice, the Everglades, Waikiki, and Alaska are all at risk. One small Alaskan town, the last frontier of the last frontier, Shishmaref, has been losing 10 of its 1,300 feet every year, as winter waves slam into the island and permafrost underneath it thaws, weakening its foundation. All these islands have essentially 3 options: mitigate, innovate, or relocate. If land is disappearing, the obvious solution is the China or Dubai approach: add more. Barriers and jetties could also dampen the blow of incoming waves. Unfortunately, these would likely harm marine life, be extremely costly, and as long as the sea continues to rise, require continual maintenance. Better, of course, would be slowing climate change altogether, but raising awareness is quite difficult. It's geographically far away, happening relatively slowly, and the dynamics of wave exposure aren't the most exciting. The trifecta of not getting news coverage. Another option is to innovate. Try something, anything, no matter how bizarre sounding, to generate revenue or attention. In 2018, the Marshall Islands signed the Sovereign Currency Act, which created its own national cryptocurrency. If it works, the plan would give the islands more control over their economy and new funds to experiment with. Another idea proposed by the mayor of the Rongelap Atoll is to build, quote, the next Hong Kong, a special administrative region in the middle of the Pacific. The idea is to use the Marshall Islands' special relationship with the US to create a tax haven and pathway to the mainland, much like Hong Kong's special status with China. Most islands are trying a mix of these ideas, while also planning for the perhaps more likely worst-case scenario, relocation. In 2014, Kiribati purchased a 20-square-kilometer patch of land from the Church of England in Fiji. Its president announced, "We would hope not to put everyone on this one piece of land, but if it became absolutely necessary, yes, we could do it." The Marshall Islands, meanwhile, has an easier escape. As part of its agreement with the United States, its citizens are allowed to live, work, and study on the mainland without a visa. About a third of Marshall Islanders have migrated, many to Springdale, Arkansas, or Salem, Oregon. Although there's a catch. Marshallese living on the mainland are not legally considered citizens, but also not immigrants or refugees. They're permanent non-immigrants, which makes them ineligible for some federal services, including Medicaid. And if the Compact of Free Association is not renewed when it ends in 2024, this door will close entirely. Years ago, the US government swept its radioactive misdeeds quite literally under the rug. And as sea levels rise, it seems to be doing much the same. Ignore the problem as it grows until one day it's too late. Today, the Marshall Islands, tomorrow, Waikiki, eventually, New York. Those who've survived drowning report the same pattern. At first, an overwhelming feeling of panic, arms flailing, legs kicking. Anything, no matter how ridiculous, to try to get the attention of the people around you. Eventually, though, dread turns to tranquility, a calmness, a dangerous complicity, a feeling that it's too late, that nothing can be done. The reality is, it's not too late. Yet. The world is well into the panic stage, but also at serious risk of turning into acceptance. It always feels like you can just hold your breath a few more seconds until you can't. When the US military arrived on the Marshall Islands in 1946, asking locals to give up their homes for what they claimed was the good of humankind, their leader responded with the words now imprinted on the flag of Bikini Atoll. Everything is in the hands of God. Now the future is in ours. Not everyone has an up-close view of rising sea levels, but I, for one, can really relate to the feeling of having your head underwater, being totally overwhelmed with so much to do and so little time to do it. Recently, after watching this class on Skillshare, I started planning pretty much every minute of my day. I used to put everything on a to-do list, but let's be honest, I usually ended the week with more to do than when I started. It's a lot easier to add to the list than remember to check it. I highly recommend checking out Thomas Frank's class on productivity, or one of the others on design, programming, investing, cooking, and lots of other topics. You can try Skillshare today with a 2-month free trial, with a link in the description, for the first 500 people. Thanks to Skillshare, and to you for watching.